Okay, first up this afternoon here, we have Jason White, who will be presenting by sound, by touch, using Linux with speech braille output interfaces. Jason is blind, as you might have worked out, so this will be a very different view on some of the things that we've taken for granted. Please welcome Jason.
Thank you very much. I think this is best described as an overview talk. It's characterized by breadth rather than depth, broad and shallow, not too much poking around in source code for the purposes of preparing this talk, but I hope that the information which I provide today is nonetheless interesting and valuable. We need to start with some relatively non-technical background and talk about the fundamentals of speech and braille output. And I thought I'd start with the technology which is least likely to be familiar to a general audience, namely the refreshable braille display. And I've been very fortunate in bringing one here this afternoon so that you can see it, and we can, I've also incorporated a few very brief demonstrations into this talk. Braille is a system of reading and writing that was developed in the early 19th century by the French pedagogue Louis Braille, and it's since become the predominant system of tactile reading and writing for people who are blind. Braille readers often prefer it to audio, for example. There is a significant cognitive difference between reading a text oneself and having it read out, and I think people who have grown up with Braille and who have used it as a form of literacy notice that cognitive difference, just as a print reader would notice a similar cognitive difference between listening to something and reading it. Now, the basic unit of Braille is the Braille cell, which conventionally is composed of three rows by two columns of dot positions. In each such position, a dot may be present or absent. That was 3 by 2, that means we have 6 dots. Therefore, 2 to the power of 6 gives us 64 possibilities, including the blank space for each particular braille cell. And the meanings of those braille cells are completely dependent on the braille code which is being used. Thus, for example, English braille is going to be very different from music braille or Japanese braille, and there are various codes for mathematics, chemistry, for various languages, and so on. Obviously, it's possible to give, to some extent, a one-to-one representation of the alphabet in the Braille code, but in order to save space when Braille is embossed on paper and to enhance the speed of reading, quite a number of languages, including English, employ systems of abbreviations which are standardized in technical standards documents. And these abbreviations, or contractions as they're called, abbreviate whole words and parts of words, by which I mean, in the latter case, frequently occurring groups of letters. So there are really two ways of reading. There's the direct character by character way of representing the text, in which there's some sort of straightforward correspondence, and then there is grade 2 or contracted braille in which that system of abbreviations is used. The translation of text into contracted braille has been automated since the 1960s. There were further research projects in that area in the 1970s, and currently the major fields of research in that regard have to do with technical braille production involving mathematics and other complex technical fields. The translation of text into contracted braille, although it's automated, involves some quite complex rules, which is why techniques from automata theory, parsing, and finite syntax are predominantly used. Now, a refreshable Braille display is a device which is able to display Braille dynamically. It's based on an 8-dot system these days, so instead of having the typical 6-dot configuration that I described earlier, two extra dots are added to the bottom of each cell, so we actually get four rows by two columns per cell position. And this is done so that you can represent more characters in a one-to-one method, and also as a means of representing the cursor. So, for example, the cursor would be represented as the ordinary character using the upper six dots, and the two bottom dots would be both present to indicate that that's the cursor location. Now, a refreshable Braille display uses a piezoelectric mechanism. This is the main mechanism used by almost all Braille displays currently manufactured. And the technology behind it is rather expensive. I should point out that I have a series of references on my website that are associated with this presentation. And the first of these references is a great historical introduction to Braille, giving the whole history of how it developed from the early times through to the standard setting committees that defined its development in later years. But the second document is a paper, or rather a transcript of a talk by Dean Blasey, in which he describes the various mechanisms that have been used or sought to be used in the development of Braille display technology. And he makes it clear that the piezoelectric mechanism is still the only real option. Many others have been proposed. Seldom have they reached the prototype stage, and never have they entered into production or become available to the public. So the basic principle of the piezoelectric mechanism is that you mount a pin, a plastic pin, on the end or the free end of a piezoelectric element, which is a long reed of going back a couple of centimetres, which is made out of a piezoelectric ceramic. And when you apply 200 volts across it, it bends along its length far enough to raise the pin through the surface of the display area, or indeed to lower the pin and retract it below the surface of the display area. We pack lots of these together in the correct Braille cell configuration to get a single line of Braille cells, in the case of the display in front of me, comprising 40 Braille cells, and therefore we have 40 by 8 piezoelectric pins very closely packed. This kind of technology is probably the most expensive technology available for people who are blind or vision impaired. A 40-cell Braille display such as this one would cost on the order of $8,500 Australian dollars. And that puts them out of reach of quite a number of people who would benefit, and it also leads to interesting funding challenges. The largest Braille display in the world, as far as I know, was developed at the University of Stuttgart by Metek and Pappenmeyer, and that comprises, if I remember correctly, a 120 by 60 matrix, which is also capable of representing graphics and simple animations. Unfortunately, the 100,000 Deutschmark price tag from the late 80s or early 90s when this was built ensured that very few of them were ever produced. And I think you could describe them more as an interesting research project than as something which is practically changing people's lives at the moment. With better Braille cell technology, that could change. So this Braille display here has, as I mentioned before, 40 cells. There are three buttons on the left and three on the right, which can be pressed in any combination to control the display. It's connected to the host computer via a USB interface. This particular device supports USB serial and Bluetooth. And the communication between the host computer and operating system and the Braille display is at a very low level. So, for example, bit patterns are used to represent the contents of the Braille cells that are written to the display. and the press and release events of the keys generate their own sequences of bytes which are sent to the host computer and can be interpreted by the software. Above each braille cell is a small button. Obviously these correspond one-to-one with the braille cells, and they can be pressed. If one of these buttons is pressed, obviously it will cause a button press sequence to be sent to the host computer. But the purpose of these is for such applications as cursor movement. So for example, you can read the text on the screen or through a document, and if there's a particular point that you want to move the system cursor to, you can press the button which is above that particular character, and the computer will obviously determine based on the bytes sent to it which button that corresponds to, and it will move the cursor accordingly, typically by sending simulated keystrokes to the application. So we've basically covered the essentials of the hardware. I'd like to move on now to the a completely different topic, which is an introduction to speech synthesis as it's used for our purposes. And in particular, I'm talking about unlimited vocabulary text-to-speech synthesis, by which text is converted into speech. This is a technology which has been under development for a long time. Initially, speech synthesizers were hardware devices with their own dedicated digital signal processing hardware, usually interfaced via a serial port. These days, they're typically implemented in software running on the host computer, thanks to the availability of high-quality sound cards and the immense processing power that we have at our disposal relative to what we started with in the 70s and 80s when speech synthesizers were first being developed. The process of converting text to speech is a rather complicated one, first involving the translation of the text into some kind of phonetic representation, a sequence of phonemes, for example, and then a second process. This is obviously a highly simplified view of the matter, in which the phonetic string is then further processed and converted into a speech waveform that can be sent to the output device. For our purposes, there are really two kinds of speech synthesizer to be concerned with, and they differ at that second phase of processing, namely the conversion to the speech waveform. Obviously, the text to phoneme conversion, which also has to take into account, for example, variants of phonemes that occur in different contexts and the complexities of the relationship between the script of the language, for example, the alphabet and pronunciation. This is a very complicated process, and questions of accuracy arise frequently. Now, the second part of the process is the conversion to speech waveform, as I mentioned, and there are really two kinds to be concerned with. Diphone synthesizers, and a good example of this is Festival, which is developed at the Centre for Speech Technology Research at the University of Edinburgh, and basically it uses a database of sounds or of phones which it combines together to generate the speech output. There's some discussion of this on their website. And the other kind of speech synthesis is the sort that was developed by principally by Dennis Klatt at MIT in the 1980s. This is known as formant synthesis, whereby a mathematical model is constructed of the formant frequencies of human speech production and of speech articulation. And that model, with a great deal of digital signal processing complexity that I wouldn't claim to understand in the least, is used to convert the phonetic representation into the speech waveform using various parameters. And the difference between these synthesizer types will become significant as we proceed. All right, so that's the basic background in place, and I now wish to turn to the software which is available for Linux. First of all, I mentioned that Festival is widely available. It's free software in all the right senses of the term. There's also, it's rather a large program. There's also a smaller version of it whereby the Diphone database gets compiled into C code and it's all linked into an executable. And that version is known as Festival Lite. Furthermore, there's a more recently developed speech synthesizer available for Linux called eSpeak, and I'm reasonably confident that it uses some kind of formant synthesis technique to generate its speech. It sounds very different from Festival. It's also light on memory consumption and CPU usage, and it's very responsive, which is an important characteristic for the kinds of applications that we have in mind. Now, I'd like to move on to the first kind of application that I wish to discuss, namely the screen reader at the console level. A screen reader is a program which provides speech output from an application program or from an operating system. And its function is not only to read out whatever appears on the screen, as the term would imply, but also to enable the user to review the contents of the screen, typically in the case of speech output with keyboard commands, and to control the speech synthesizer. So, for example, to set the speech rate or the volume, or to adjust the extent to which punctuation symbols are read out. Now, there are, at the Linux console level, basically two screen reading packages that I'd like to highlight, and that they are, the project sites are referred to in my references associated with this talk. The first one is SpeakUp, which is actually written as a kernel module, although strictly speaking, apparently a kernel patch is still required in order to get this to work. And for input, it takes over the numeric keypad so that those keys become used for speech commands and speech operations. And given that it's a kernel module, it's hardly surprising that it operates at a very early level upon system startup. So quite early in the startup process, SpeakUp is able to come to life and to provide access to boot messages, for example, even before you get to the login prompt at the console. Now, SpeakUp works best in this regard with hardware-based speech synthesizers that are connected via a serial interface, but using a library called Speech Dispatcher, it is also capable of interfacing to software synthesizers such as Festival and eSpeak. SpeakUp has never been proposed for inclusion in the mainline kernel. Apparently, there are a number of good reasons why it hasn't been in regard to its programming style and methodology, but it does exist and it seems to have a significant user base. Of course, there can always be arguments about whether this sort of thing is best put in user space with the mechanism in the kernel instead of having a kernel module that does all of it, but I won't enter into those debates now. So the second program that I'd like to mention is YASR, which was written by Mike Gorse. It stands for Yet Another Screen Reader, or Your All-Purpose Screen Reader, depending on your preference. And YASR is a user space program, and the functionality of it is very similar in enabling screen review and speech access to the Linux console. I think the best way of describing its mechanism is to say that it's similar to the GNU screen program with which many of us are very familiar. In other words, it allocates a virtual TTY, it executes a shell in the TTY, and all of the input and output from that shell and from all the sub-processes of it goes through YASR, enabling it to read the contents of the screen as provided by the applications and the shell. It takes over certain alt key combinations, which are all configurable in the configuration file, and it provides exactly the same functionality in essential respects as SpeakUp that I described earlier, and it's basically a screen reading program and quite a useful one at that. The screen reading approach has been the paradigm since the early 1980s, and it's not all that complicated in principle set up a screen reader that will provide good quality interaction with the Linux console and with all of the software that's available at that level. The Braille access is provided by a program called Braille TTY, which has been under development since the mid-1990s. If I remember rightly, it originated at Cambridge University. And it supports various manufacturers and models of Braille display. In fact, just about all of the major manufacturers and many of the lesser known ones are represented. It's a very sophisticated program. It uses the virtual console devices in /DEV/VCSA and related devices to capture details of what's going on the Linux console. And for input, it relies on the keys and buttons of the Braille device which is connected to it. It supports serial USB and Bluetooth devices, and it also, in addition to providing console level access, has an API with bindings in various programming languages which enables applications to take direct control of the Braille display to write text to it and to receive commands from the Braille display itself when buttons on the Braille display are pressed. Braille TTY is a daemon process which can execute during the init scripts, and it does a very good job at automatically detecting the Braille display which is connected to it. In fact, Braille TTY is now available by default on Debian installation images. So you can put a CD in the drive, connect the Braille display, press the enter key at the boot prompt, wait for it, and the Braille display will be automatically detected and activated, and you can use a Braille display to work your way through the Debian installation process. In fact, it will even install itself automatically on the target system so that when that boots, you get Braille access there as well. I think some other distributions have a bit of catching up to do on that point, however. So, we've talked about Braille TTY. Next, I'd like to discuss speech-enabled applications, and that's a completely different category of software. It's really not a screen reader. And as T.V. Raman points out, if anybody says that Emacs Speak is a screen reader, then they're suffering from a serious conceptual misunderstanding. Now, a speech-enabled application is essentially one in which you have some kind of extension to an application which provides a customized speech interface. And the leading example of this is T.V. Raman's Emacs Speak program, which is written largely in Emacs Lisp. Raman uses the advice feature of Emacs Lisp, which enables him to ensure that his speech functions are called before or after function calls are made by Emacs or by its applications. And using this mechanism, he is able to develop a highly customized and very powerful spoken user interface to Emacs, including various extensions and applications of Emacs, which, as you know, is something of a full-scale desktop environment, not just a text editor. A feature which Emacs users love and which VI users take as a point of criticism. So, Emacs Speak has a number of innovations to it, including the fact that it uses a technique developed by Raman in an earlier project known as audio formatting, whereby various parameters of the speech synthesizer, pitch, speech quality and so on, are adjusted in various ways to provide the audio equivalent of fonts, essentially, different voices, different tones of voice for different purposes. And a great example of how this is used, of course, is oral syntax highlighting, so that the identifiers will be read in one voice, the comments in another, and so on. Obviously, this is used throughout the Emacs Speak application. He also invokes auditory icons, which are very short sounds that just give you a quick indication of some action that has been performed or something which has taken place. And given the power of Emacs, he's able to construct a very sophisticated user interface without modifying the source code of Emacs itself or of its applications. The only application that I know of in which there have been significant extensions with regard to Emacs speak is the Emacs W3 web browser, in which TV Raman implemented oral cascading style sheets, which basically an extension to CSS that was standardized in CSS2 that enables auditory properties or speech properties to be associated with the various elements of an HTML document. All right, so the other good interesting example, which I also put under the speech-enabled applications heading, is a new or relatively new program called Firevox, written by Charles Chen. This is a speech-enabling extension to Firefox. It does in fact work under Linux, although apparently the only speech synthesizer currently supported is a Java version of Festival that Sun Microsystems released some years ago. What's interesting though is that Charles Chen and TV Raman have entered into a collaboration, and now there's a new feature which is just being incorporated into the latest SVN releases of Emacs Speak, which provides an interface between Emacs Speak and Firefox. So the idea is that you can run Firefox with essentially a null X server, and then a communication will be set up between Emacs Speak and the Firefox extension, whereby you can enter into an Emacs buffer. The keys that you type get forwarded to Firefox, and the output becomes available via Emacs Speak using the speech synthesizer that you've chosen. That's also quite sophisticated in regard to the fact that it can work rather well with some of the recent developments that have taken place in making web applications and JavaScripted client-side interfaces more accessible. Emacs Speak, I should point out, has a client-server design, so that most of it is implemented in Emacs Lisp, but there's also a speech server written in TCL, which provides the specifics needed to drive the particular hardware or software speech synthesizer. Emacs Speak speech servers have also been picked up by other speech applications such as YASR, and they can be used to drive other screen readers and other speech-enabled software. All right, so we're moving right along, and we're now at the point of discussing access under the X Windows system. Now, this is a large and complex topic, and I don't claim to be the ultimate expert or even any kind of expert in this regard. And I think the best way to understand what's happening here is for some historical background. Now, I suppose you could ask the question, given that we're talking about speech and braille interfaces, as to why anybody would want speech or braille access to applications running under the X Windows system. I suppose there are various reasons. One, of course, is that there are some applications the functionality of which is only available under X. So, for example, if I had to edit ODF documents, I'm pleased to say I don't. I write in LaTeX, so I don't need to edit ODF, do I? But if I did have to edit ODF documents, then the only real convenient way to do it, if you don't want to deal with lots of complicated XML in a text editor, is to have access to openoffice.org. And the same with Firefox and JavaScript-enabled applications for which you need the kind of web browser that implements all of these features that Mozilla have. So that's one reason, functionality only provided by X applications. Another reason would be that for some people who come from certain other operating systems which we could name, this kind of environment will initially be somewhat more familiar. I'm sure there can be disagreement regarding the strength of that argument, but it is a significant argument, and after all, the free software and open source community is all about choice, isn't it? So, how do we provide speech or braille output from a graphical X application? The historical background is that in the mid-1990s at the Georgia Institute of Technology, a project initially called Mercator and later renamed to Ultrasonics was developed. The first thing that the researchers discovered in trying to develop a speech interface under X was that the X protocol itself operates at far too low a level to provide the information that they needed in order to provide to construct the spoken interface. And so they found it necessary to extend the user interface libraries containing the user interface components to supply the necessary information which a screen reading application could then use to provide access to the application. Now, this is essentially the design which the GNOME accessibility framework uses. Sun researchers and developers first implemented this in Java using the Java Swing user interface library. And that work, of course, has now been released under the GPL, so I'm sure we'll be hearing much more about it in the community in subsequent years. This approach was then carried further and integrated into the GNOME accessibility APIs. The idea is that there's a common interface using an inter-process communication mechanism which is used to provide details regarding the names, the state, etc. of all the objects in the user interface, as well as their location in the user interface hierarchy and the details of child objects, etc., all of which is provided by an inter-process communication mechanism to the assistive technology, in this case a screen reader, which then provides speech or braille access to that information, including review functionality as well as reading out dialogues and menus as the user navigates through them. Of course, in order for this to work, the application has to be keyboard enabled, and that's a matter for the application itself. Any custom widgets and custom user interface components that the application uses need to be extended to support the accessibility API. And one of the great challenges here is making sure that all of the relevant applications provide the necessary support and that changes to them don't break the accessibility. So that's essentially the kind of framework that we're talking about. In GNOME, there is an accessibility API. There's a broker, accessibility broker, that provides the interface that allows assistive technology applications such as screen readers to register for access to this information. And CORBA is currently used as the inter-process communication mechanism. Sorry?
We've got enough time for 5 more minutes of talk and then 10 minutes of questions.
Okay, well, at least we're getting towards the end, aren't we? So, now, what's happening with KDE and Mozilla and OpenOffice is an interesting matter. Mozilla and OpenOffice are quite well advanced and they integrate very well with the GNOME accessibility APIs. There's a great deal of discussion going on in development-oriented mailing lists at the moment about changing the inter-process communication mechanism, moving away from CORBA and using DBUS instead. And apparently Trolltech and the KDE developers have implemented a version of the accessibility API that uses DBUS with Qt4, and that's the kind of accessibility framework which they plan to integrate into KDE. Obviously that would be KDE 4 in some future version or other. So these things are under development. They require support from application developers. They do involve, or they can often involve, in the case of custom user interface components, modifications to the source code of the application. And so that's basically it. There's the screen reader, by the way, used by the GNOME accessibility framework is called Orca, and it's written in Python. You can have Python extensions written which improve the speech or braille access provided by particular applications. Speech is available through the GNOME speech library, through Emacs Speak speech servers, and Braille support is provided by Braille TTY using that Braille API that I talked about earlier on when I was describing Braille TTY. So in the very few minutes that we have left, I'd like to enter into a few reflections on what remains to be done in this area. Obviously, there is room for further development in regard to access under the X Windows system to desktop environments and their applications. I'm sure that will progress over time. One of the difficulties here, I think, is that you can have a graphical user interface that works perfectly well as a graphical user interface in which the accessibility support is broken. And unfortunately, that means there has to be additional development work and testing done to make sure that it operates correctly, because this has been, even though the accessibility framework is fairly good from a conceptual point of view, it is, after all, added on as an afterthought. It's not fundamental to the way in which the user interface libraries are designed. And I think there's room for the development of different ways of constructing user interfaces. I wrote a paper in 2004 describing the ways in which the technologies used in markup languages, whereby documents are written in a generic markup language and then styled for the particular delivery context or the particular output device, have been and can be extended to the domain of user interfaces. So if the free software community moves in that direction, then there could be some interesting possibilities opened up. I think the development of a free and open text-to-speech system that is comparable in quality to the best proprietary ones is an important task that needs to be taken up somewhere and somehow. The current speech quality is reasonable with eSpeak, for example, but there is room for improvement. And although some proprietary systems are available under Linux, they all have their problems, and those problems all stem from the fact that they're closed and proprietary, and we can't just have developers going in and fixing the bugs. So those are some areas where I think improvement is necessary. I have other thoughts on that. I'm sure it also depends on what happens in the future regarding free and open software and the development of user interfaces, because after all, there is important scope for changes and improvements in user interface design. Personally, I work entirely at the console level because a console-based, textually oriented Unix-type user interface is just so much easier and more efficient for me to work with. Obviously, the advent of increasingly JavaScript-enabled web pages means that Mozilla Firefox is a necessary tool, and thus it's a good thing that with Firefox 3 the accessibility support will be coming to the rescue. I think the Emacs speak integration is a great move forward. So I suppose that's really the essentials of it. Let's open this up for questions. I have the Braille display running here. If you want anything demonstrated on that, I can do that, and I can also run YASR briefly with eSpeak. We have it hooked up to the audio system here, and so you can listen to what that sounds like if people are interested, and I can take questions.
Okay, we have a question in the middle.
Hi, my name is Martin. I have a question. I'm first for a very, very good presentation. Pleasure to listen to you. I have many quick questions. I'll limit it down to just the short one of it. Are there many non-blind developers typing on it? Or is it mainly
as
that's your own
edge? Can I just ask Jason to repeat the question for the benefit of the recording, please?
Right. The question was, is the development of these tools very much a scratch your own itch kind of motivation, where the developers are also the users of the technology or not? And the answer is, in many cases, it is precisely that, and I think that makes the software a lot better. After all, the people who are developing it are also users of it. They use it every day. They're not going to make basic mistakes, and they're going to provide the features which they and other users of it find useful, as opposed to developers who might use it just for testing purposes or just occasionally, for whom it might not be immediately obvious where the problems are. Now, the GNOME accessibility framework and all of the software associated with that is developed by a number of organizations, including Sun and, until recently, IBM developers. Sun have taken a leading role in this, and that the developers there are quite often not users of the software, but they collaborate very closely with users on mailing lists.
Thank you. The second question is, I had a discussion with another blind developer the other day, and it was sort of an asynchronous IRC discussion. So 4 hours or something like that. He was also working on both at the same time. So I didn't get a chance to ask, but I wonder, how does this work for you? Is the context such as, like, you are working on a program, and then an IRC message pops up for you? What happens? How do you react to it?
That's an interesting question. And obviously with most IRC applications, you would have to be in the console that has the IRC application running on it to get the message, right? So I suppose you'd have to switch back and forth to check, wouldn't you? I mean, that would seem to be the case. Or maybe you could run a speech program in one console and use the Braille display to do what you're doing in the other, and then as soon as the IRC message comes in, it will be read out. So that would certainly give it to you pretty quickly. So yes, there are ways and means of doing this.
Thank you.
Okay, question in the middle.
My name is Patrick. It's more of a examples of the characters that you didn't have done based on the condition of the one thing, my personal situation, just that
Sounds like all like a very good idea. Yes, these matters are expensive and the funding situation in this country is not good. So for example, if you live in Europe and you need a Braille display, quite a number of European countries will simply provide state funding that covers the costs so that those who need them have them.
Okay, question. Yes, I have come across one. A really good example of this. Now, if you have Debian, this is really easy. Apt-get install edbrowse. Or just go to edbrowse.sourceforge.net. Have a look at it. It is what you think it is. Just imagine ed with an HTML processing capability, also linked in with Mozilla's JavaScript interpreter so that it can handle some JavaScript enabled forms. And yes, you can go to a URI, read a web document, fill in forms and do what you like, all with ed. And that, I can assure you, is a highly linear environment. Perl compatible regular expressions, by the way, so that makes it even better. I tried it earlier this year. I'd never used ed before, but after a bit of practice I was able to do it. Now, I think the most...
They sound better. The way in which the contour of the sentence is formed makes it sound much more like the reading of a sentence, the pronunciation accuracy of the text to phoneme conversion is typically better. And also, of course, the formant synthesizers, and I think I forgot to mention this, basically the formant synthesizers, because they use a mathematical model of human speech production, are able to vary a number of parameters of the speech, and that's the facility which T.V. Raman takes advantage of in the development of his speech-enabled user interface in Emacs speak. So the proprietary systems, especially the good ones, for example, the system developed by Dennis Klatt, support all of that very well. And they're also highly responsive, which is an extremely important feature. In fact, eSpeak is also like this. What I mean by that is that if you press a key, the speech has to stop straight away and jump straight on to whatever the next announcement is, or stop completely. People interact with these speech interfaces as quickly as they can, and any kind of latency is really going to slow down the interaction. So it has to be highly responsive as well.
Okay, we have time for one more question.
And then I can quickly turn on eSpeak if you like.
Sorry? Yeah, okay. Proceed with your demonstration.
Oh, well, I suppose there's one here. You've obviously seen the Braille display. I just reactivated it. It's had the battery in it. It shut itself down due to inactivity.
Can I just hold it up for a minute? Because some people can't see
it. Yeah, and I'll hold it carefully.
Yeah, or you just hold it and face it towards the audience that way.
That way.
So you can see down there you've got the Braille bit that go up and down.
Yeah.
And
then the buttons above it. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's...
I think everybody's seen it now.
That's the Braille display. Actually, whenever it shuts itself down like that, there's a nice message written to syslog, so... Now... Let's see what we can do.
USB. Or at least that's how he's using it.
So I'm just running links at the moment with my own web page of the abstract and the details of this talk. Let's try running YASR. I just installed this with eSpeak, so we'll see how we...
Jason at JPC, tilde stroke right in stroke www stroke LCA dollar. TML, get in file colon stroke.
Stop that. And I'll go and start with...
Renew, top, using Linux with speech and Braille output interfaces, P1 of by sound, blank, by sound and by touch, using Linux with speech and Braille output interfaces, blank, abstract. Blank. This presentation provides an overview of how GNU stroke Linux can be accessed using Braille and speech-based user interfaces, as commonly employed by people who are blind or vision impaired. In doing so, a conceptual...
And I'm just reviewing the screen now. We have links showing the first page of my abstract. And I'm reviewing the screen line by line. That's why it's reading out the fact that we have blank lines up there. And that's basically... YASR running on with eSpeak, and I'll just
exit
the review.
Are you sure you want to quit? What Jason at JPC, tilde stroke right in stroke W, Jason at exit.
Let's see just if we can get into Emacs speak for this.
Press CHCE to get an overview of Emacs speak 26.0 revision unknown. I am completely operational, and all my circuits are fine color. Stroke right in stroke WWW stroke LCS stroke.
See what's happening here. I'm in Emacs speak now, and that's reading out.
It's very enlightening not having a display. You can really feel what it is like.
I'm colon. Stroke right in stroke www stroke
LCS stroke. Directory. So.
Find file. Stroke BOLTTY stroke red.
I'm just trying to see if I can get some source code or something, just so we can quickly get oral syntax highlighting.
Throw. Dotty.
There we go. I've just gone into Emacs with Emacs speak, and I've taken the Braille display driver from the Braille TTY source code, so it's a nice C source file. And we'll just see what it does.
Event 1, asterisk, BOLTTY hyphen, a background process providing access to the console screen, bell bracket, when in. Set speech rate, event 1, asterisk, text mode, R bracket, for a blind person using a refreshable braille display, dot.
That speech sounds a bit different. That's because it's reading C comments. If we go forward.
Mode, R bracket, indent 1, asterisk, L, R bracket, indent 1, asterisk, right raised. Static keys, active keys, semicolon. Static keys, pressed keys, semicolon.
Okay, so it's reading out source code and doesn't sound too good, does it?
Active processes exist, semicolon.
Active processes exist, yes, I want to get out of Emacs, thank you.
Jason at JPC, tilde stroke writing.
Okay, we're...
I think that's about it, so that gives you some idea. I just started Emacs speak there and you had some idea of how the audio, auditory formatting or speech formatting is done. I think that's about it for us. Thank you very much.